Welcome to the Words with Jam podcast. This month we bring you the opening to Darren Guest's intelligent and complex horror novel Dark Heart, read by Daniel Barzotti.
Reuben palmed steam from the mirror so he could see his face, gripped the bone-handled dagger and drew the blade across his wrist. Blood spat from the gash and whirled round the basin in pink rivers. He studied the reflection of his eyes, longing to glimpse a flicker of the old Reuben. But they were stagnant pools, dead and dark. A droplet of sweat grew fat on the tip of his nose, seemed to fall in slow motion. The ceiling fan in the bedroom turned pointlessly. The aircon unit whirred close to useless. He rinsed the blade and set it down on the towel beside the basin, bandaged his wrist with a handkerchief, and pulled a tight knot with his teeth. How many times had he done this? When had he stopped counting? He took the dagger through to the bedroom without the answer. On the bed were two blocks of wood, a concaved imprint of the dagger carved into each. Reuben laid the dagger into one of the halves and placed its mirror twin on top, entombing it like a pharaoh king. White light pulsed along the seam for a moment, then blinked out, leaving only a solid block of ebony, roughly the same size as a shoebox. He wrapped the box in parcel paper and attached an airmail sticker to cover the 2,000-mile journey from Cairo to Suffolk, England. He bit the cap off a marker pen and wrote the address, taking care not to drip blood, but tutted at the expanding red full stop after the name, Leo Stamp. There was a knock at the door. "One moment," Reuben called, smoothing a wad of crumpled banknotes against his leg. He placed the cash on the parcel and stepped back into the steaming bathroom. "Come in." A young Egyptian boy entered, carrying a bottle of red wine and a glass. He set the tray on the bedside cabinet.
"Good wine, sir."
Reuben looked over his shoulder, shielding his wrist. "See the parcel?" The boy nodded, brown eyes wide. "See the money?" The boy scooped the cash from the parcel, his eyes growing wider as he fanned the notes. "It's all there," Reuben said. "Do as I've asked, and you'll never see me again. Deviate, and I'll be the last thing you ever see. Goes for your friend, too." The boy swallowed.
"The hotel courier is my cousin, a good man. His share will feed his family for 6 months."
"And your share?"
"PlayStation,"
the boy said, and produced a leather pouch from around his neck. He poked the notes inside and dropped it back beneath his robe. Reuben stared, half hoped the boy would double-cross.
"Are you well, sir? You look very pale."
"I'm fine, but I'll be sleeping late tomorrow, and don't want to be disturbed."
The boy bowed, took the parcel and left. Reuben untied the dressing and pumped his fist over the basin, his arm tingling with pins and needles. He went to the wine and filled his glass, paused to inhale the bouquet and downed half in one gulp. He grabbed the bottle with his failing hand and headed for the balcony, leaving trails of modern art on the marble floor as he went. The sun burned white over Cairo, but couldn't warm the unnatural chill settling into his bones. A chorus of car horns and ranting natives drifted up from the street below, seemingly oblivious to the view that never failed to take his breath. Jutting from the horizon and the cityscape of unfinished buildings were the two larger of the three pyramids that formed Orion's Belt. He toasted the tombs and collapsed to his knees, dropping the bottle but saving the glass. One last mouthful, and that too found the tiles. Reuben slumped onto his side and waited for the darkness that could not be rushed, but always came, wondering how many hours would pass before the dagger was in his hand once more, and the killing started all over again. Leo brushed aside the gravel concealing the house brick. Beneath the brick was the spare key to the barn. He unlocked the front door, nudged it open with a knuckle, and buried the key as before. Palms down on the welcome mat, he stretched his hamstrings. After a 10 count, he let his head drop, stared upside down between his legs at the country road he'd left behind. He checked his watch. 6 miles in 42 minutes. Not bad. He stood and breathed in a rare moment of tranquility. Through the open door, his eyes were drawn across the polished oak floorboards and towards his new rug. Contrasting the immaculate white, sat a dog turd the size of his fist. "You little bitch!" A familiar red cloud began to stain his zen-like calm like blood being poured into a freshly drawn bath. "Where are you, Muttley?" he called, and stepped inside. Muttley wasn't the bitch-on's real name, just one Leo used to piss his dad off. But since Daddy was dead, he could start calling her Cotton, her given name. Only there was always a chance the old man could hear him from his grave. The chocolate leather sofa was dog-free, as was the folded blanket by the breakfast bar. Cotton's bed. Only one more place to check. Leo bounded up the oak staircase to the mezzanine level of the barn, leaving sweaty handprints on the glass balustrade as he went. He pushed open the door to the spare bedroom and dropped to his knees. Even before he lifted the duvet, he could hear her growls, but thrust his hands under the bed anyway. Cotton bit his hand, but he still managed to grab her by the scruff and pull her out. She hung like a cub, a feral reverberation coming from somewhere deep inside her teddy bear facade. The thought of rubbing her nose in her own gunk flashed in his mind for a second, followed shortly by the logistics of getting a shit-cake dog upstairs to the bath without her shaking faecal matter over the gallery-white walls. Instead, Leo marched her downstairs at arm's length, trying not to think of the different kinds of infectious bacteria now swimming around in his bloodstream. He opened the front door, already regretting what he was about to do, but helpless to see sense through the blood cloud fogging his brain. Cotton twisted in the air and landed cat-like before skidding to a stop, which was punctuated by a sneeze and a shake of her curly coat. He slammed the door behind her. After dumping the soiled rug into a black sack, Leo went in the kitchen and scrubbed his hands with antibacterial soap, the stink of shit already eating into his paws. He repeated the process 3 times, dried his hands, and took a deep breath. The blood cloud had cleared, leaving only Cotton's little face. "Christ, you're an arsehole," Leo told himself. "I'd bite me." He grabbed a handful of bacon bite dog treats and opened the front door, but the only thing on his drive was the postman, and he was carrying a parcel, roughly the size of a shoebox. Leo put the parcel on the desk by the sofa and read the address. Sure enough, it was for him. But when he saw that the airmail sticker's origin was Egypt, he checked his name again. This time he noticed a rusty red full stop after his name, and his morbid mind saw blood. He tore away the brown paper and ran his hands down the sides of the black box, turning it over and around, trying to find a marking or a catch that would open it. But it was smooth on every side. He held it to his ear and shook it. Nothing. Maybe it wasn't a box. Maybe it was exactly what it looked like, a solid block of ebony. The wrapping paper had no return address or any clue as to who might have sent it. It certainly wasn't for him. He didn't know anybody from Egypt, unless his dad had taken a trip out there before he died and the delivery had been delayed somehow. There would still be a note, though. A happy 35th, son. Here's a lump of wood. I hope this makes up for my being a neglectful arsehole all your life. No, it definitely wasn't for him. Despite its apparent uselessness, it was attractive, seemed to fit in with the minimalism of the barn. And besides, it was a guarantee that if he dumped it, someone would knock on his door asking for their lump of wood back. For now, it could be the dining table centrepiece. At least until he could think of somewhere better, or until he got that knock on his door. He took the block through to the dining area, stood it on its end, and stepped back from the table. It put him in mind of Arthur C. Clarke's monolith, albeit a miniature version. It made him think of the ape creature that had wielded a bone in that movie and used it to crush the skull of another of its kind. From there, Leo's mind jumped to a more disturbing memory, where he was just a boy, and the bone was his to wield.